Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Local news roundup. Man dies in connection to car-pedestrian collision. A 35-year-old Odessa man died after he was reportedly involved in a car-pedestrian collision last week in South Odessa. The reported collision happened at 11:20 p.m. May 27th in the 100 block of East Clements, an OPD press release detailed. Investigation reportedly showed a blue Cadillac Escalade being operated by 21-year-old Richard Candia of Odessa was traveling west in the 100 block of East Clements. A pedestrian, later identified as 35-year-old Jose Cruz Vega Jr. of Odessa, was walking west on the sidewalk in the 100 block of East Clements. Vega stepped off the sidewalk and into the roadway before being struck by the Cadillac Escalade. Vega was transported to a local hospital with life-threatening injuries. At 8:21 a.m. Thursday, Vega was reportedly pronounced dead by medical personnel. Next of kin have been notified and the investigation continues. Man charged with stealing more than $4,700 worth of cigarettes. An OPD department affidavit detailed a 50-year-old man was arrested after he stole more than $4,700 worth of cigarettes from six gas stations. Thurman Williams was charged with six counts of burglary of a building, a state jail felony. The reported burglaries happened between March 27th and April 8th, the affidavit stated. On March 27th, officers were reportedly dispatched to the Quick Track, located at 1523 Harless Avenue, as a man broke the glass on the front door and took $1,500 worth of Marlboro cigarette cartons. A second burglary happened the same day when a man stole $517.90 worth of cigarettes, three Marlboro cartons, two cartons of Kool, and two Newport cartons. Officers were dispatched to the 7-Eleven located at 4601 Oakwood, April 2nd, when the store manager stated a large amount of cigarette cartons were stolen. The store manager was unsure on the amount, but stated it was a large quantity. The brands that were stolen were Kool, Newport, and Marlboro. On April 7th, officers were dispatched to the Kent Quick, located at 1100 North Grandview, as a brick was reportedly used to break the left side glass of the front door. The store manager stated $560 worth of cigarette cartons were stolen, eight cartons of Kools. Officers were dispatched to the Kent Quick located at 601 North County Road West, April 8th, after a man broke the front glass window and stole several cigarette packages and cartons, the affidavit stated. The store manager stated $2,058.37 worth of cigarettes were stolen, Newport and Marlboro. On April 15th, officers were reportedly dispatched to the Quick Track, located at 801 Golder, when a man broke the glass on the front door. The store manager stated $100 worth of Newport cigarettes were stolen. OPD received information on May 14th that the person involved in all burglaries was Williams, the affidavit stated. The source wanted to remain anonymous as Williams knows where they live. Williams was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has six bonds totaling $21,000 and was still in custody as of Thursday morning, jail records show. Woman charged with assaulting officer with cell phone. A 28-year-old woman was arrested after she reportedly assaulted an OPD officer with her cell phone. Joanna Tarango was charged with assault on a public servant, a third-degree felony, resisting arrest, a Class A misdemeanor, and public intoxication, a Class C misdemeanor. The reported assault happened at 4:14 a.m. Monday in the 6800 block of Highway 191, an OPD affidavit stated. Dispatch detailed two people were arguing outside of a car on the side of the road. Tarango reportedly was arguing with a man on the side of the road in a public place, and while officers were speaking with Tarango, she admitted that she had been drinking. Officers could smell an alcoholic beverage coming from her breath and person. Tarango's eyes were glassy and bloodshot. Tarango was given multiple opportunities to find a ride, which included a friend who showed up on the scene to take her home, the affidavit stated. Tarango refused to get into the car with her friend and pushed past an OPD officer in an attempt to get into the driver's seat of her vehicle to attempt to drive away. Tarango was reportedly placed under arrest for public intoxication, and the OPD officers grabbed Tarango's arm and she began resisting. She hit the officer in the face with her cell phone. Tarango was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. She had two bonds totaling $11,000 and posted bail Tuesday, jail records show. CARES Act funding availability. The City of Odessa is seeking applications for eligible activities from 501c3 or government entities that are able to provide audited financial statements and comply with all other CDBG regulations. City of Odessa Community Development Notice of Funding Availability Request for Proposals. In response to the coronavirus pandemic, COVID-19, President Trump authorized the Corona Aid Relief and Economic Security Act, CARES Act, Public Law 116-136, on March 27th. As a result, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, awarded the City of Odessa $514,553 in Community Development Block Grant Coronavirus CDBG-CV funds to prevent, prepare for, and respond to COVID-19. The City of Odessa is seeking applications for eligible activities from 501c3 or government entities that are able to provide audited financial statements and comply with all other CDBG regulations. This application process is intended to identify and secure contracts with nonprofit agencies or government entities who demonstrate experience, commitment, and capacity to carry out one or more of the proposed services defined in the following scopes of work. The City of Odessa will work to execute contracts as soon as possible based on City Council and HUD approval. Scopes of work. Food assistance. With the onset of COVID-19, the demand for emergency food assistance has grown dramatically, while food supply and the volunteer workforce have simultaneously diminished. In response to the growing need, the City of Odessa is seeking applications from experienced providers to address food insecurity for Odessa residents with low or moderate income. Services must provide an increase in emergency and supplemental food boxes or meals for distribution. Food boxes should include nutritionally balanced food items and be tailored to the unique needs of household members whenever possible. This may include emergency food boxes, senior food boxes, student food boxes, or additional relief that clients may need that qualify as eligible expenses. Applicants must have experience working with individuals with low or moderate income, experience in safe food handling, experience in food acquisition and distribution, and the ability to adapt quickly to changing demand. Rent, mortgage, and utility assistance. In response to the increasing need, the City of Odessa is seeking applications from experienced providers to distribute rent, mortgage, and utility assistance on behalf of households with low or moderate income facing eviction or hardship as a result of COVID-19. Services must provide an increased level of rent and utility assistance to be distributed to Odessa residents to alleviate the immediate crisis. Assistance must not exceed 3 months per CDBG eligible recipient household. Applicants must have experience working with individuals with low or moderate income, experience delivering financial assistance, and ability to connect recipients to supportive services such as case management, financial planning and coaching, and special needs housing resources and providers. Mental health counseling. The COVID pandemic and resulting economic downturn have negatively affected many people's mental health and created new barriers for people already suffering from mental illness and substance use disorders. The City of Odessa is seeking applications from experienced providers to provide mental health counseling services for Odessa residents with low or moderate income. Homeless. The homeless are at a greater risk of being infected with the coronavirus than the general population. The City of Odessa is seeking applications from experienced providers to provide personal hygiene services directly to the Odessa homeless population. Mobile showers, hand washing stations, and ability to wash clothes are examples. Application location timeline. Application opens June 8th. Application available on City of Odessa website. Applicant technical assistance meeting is planned for June 10th. Detailed information is available on the application package. Application deadline is 4 p.m. June 19th. Submitted electronically to ms.andoval@odessa-tx.gov. City Council public hearing on approval and allocation of funds will take place from 6 to 7 p.m. July 14th. Special provisions. Successful applicants will be required to deliver services in coordination with the City of Odessa Community Development Department. All activities must be CDBG eligible and delivered in compliance with CDBG regulations 24 CFR Part 570 and 2 CFR Part 200. Funds must be used to prevent, prepare for, and respond to COVID-19, and all other funding options must be used prior to using CDBG-CV funding. Funding will be provided on a cost reimbursement basis. However, eligible CDBG expenditures incurred as of March 1st, 2020, used to prevent, prepare for, or respond to COVID-19 and paid for with non-federal funds may be eligible for reimbursement with CDBG-CV funding with approval from the City of Odessa. Eligible costs may include but are not limited to personnel and ERE, professional and outside services, travel, space, equipment, material and supplies, operating services, emergency grant payments for no more than 3 consecutive months paid to a provider on behalf of an individual or family, including rent, utility, or food assistance, grab and go delivery meal programs, and support of other COVID-19 response services. A full list of eligible expenses can be found in 2 CFR Part 200 and Title 24 Code of Federal Regulations Part 570. Applicants are required to maintain client data demonstrating client eligibility for services provided. Data shall include but not be limited to client name, race or ethnicity, female-headed household, handicap, disability, age, address, income level, or other basis for determining eligibility, and description of service provided. Information shall be submitted upon request for reimbursement and made available to the city during monitoring or for review upon request. For application or more information, visit tinyurl.com/WT9GWSC. OC introduces Strong Start Scholarship. Odessa College has introduced the new Strong Start Scholarship, a promise to the class of 2020 in Ector County and to all new Odessa College students who are Ector County residents and high school graduates. Their first two classes at Odessa College will be free. To qualify for the Strong Start Scholarship, new OC students must register before July 31st, 2020, be an Ector County resident, be a high school graduate. The Strong Start Scholarship is available to new students regardless of prior dual credit or summer registration status. Additionally, those students who received the first class free scholarship for the summer or the first six free dual credit scholarship in high school will still qualify for the Strong Start Scholarships. Some students may have already received financial aid benefits, but they too can still qualify for the new scholarship. Students who attended OC in the past or who want to pursue continuing education workforce training courses will not qualify for the Strong Start Scholarship, which is available only for students enrolled in degree and certificate programs. For further information or answers to any questions regarding the Strong Start Scholarship, email recruitment@odessa.edu. Food Bank distributes almost 1 million pounds of food in May. After another busy month, the totals are in, and the West Texas Food Bank distributed just shy of 1 million pounds of food in the month of May to around 25,000 households throughout 19 counties in West Texas. The record distribution was aided by help from the National Guard, a news release said. The West Texas Food Bank operates on-campus pantries at both locations in Odessa and Midland, as well as conducting mobile distributions in underserved areas of the 19 counties we serve. In May, the two in-house pantries and mobile distribution locations distributed 8,100 pantry boxes, along with proteins, fruits, and vegetables. Firebird Energy got in touch with Midland Meat Company about a donation of ground beef. Midland Meat Company matched the beef company donation and forwarded what the meat would have cost to the food bank, so the food bank received several tons of ground beef and a check for $7,500. West Texas Food Bank also expressed thanks to HEB for delivering some of the donated meat from a processor in South Texas. May turned out to be the month of matches. The organization behind Giving Tuesday, normally held in November following Black Friday and Cyber Monday, decided that May 5th was to be designated Giving Tuesday now and was used by organizations around the country to raise funds for their COVID-19 response. Following a successful matching campaign by CBS7 and the Dobbs Law Firm, Odessa attorney Juan Silva from the Silva Law Group and the Permian Basin Trial Lawyers Association donated $100,000 to the food bank, then challenged the community to donate $100,000 more, which they would match. The community stepped up, and the food bank met the match, which will allow it to provide an additional 1.3 million meals, the release said. It is easy to view the numbers from the month of May with rose-colored glasses and paint the picture of what is going on around the food bank as a win, said Libby Campbell, executive director of the West Texas Food Bank. But we must also not lose sight of the fact that the record numbers we are seeing are from our neighbors who are in crisis, and as many as 74% of the people we are serving have never been to a food bank or pantry before. And I don't want to lose sight of the fact that we don't anticipate these record numbers going down. With the Payment Protection Program, PPP, loans quickly running out, and without swift action from lawmakers in D.C., we could see another devastating round of layoffs and cuts in our West Texas workforce, and we still have not fully reopened out economy following COVID closures. I fear the worst is yet to come. On the net, WTXFoodBank.org. Cantor starts school chief post in Ira Ann by Ruth Campbell. From the time she was a youngster, Tracy Cantor has had a heart for service. It was instilled to her by her family, who are mostly in public service. Recently, she's taken that calling to Ira Ann Sheffield ISD, where she has taken on the job of superintendent. Cantor had been executive director of special education at ECISD. Born in Odessa, her twin sister, Stacy Johnson, is an executive director of elementary leadership for the district. Cantor grew up in Crowell in East Texas and then returned to Odessa for high school. She earned a bachelor's degree in English and a master's in educational leadership from the University of Texas Permian Basin and a doctorate in educational leadership from Texas Tech. My parents had always pushed the importance of education, and they really instilled that lifelong love for learning. I remember as a kiddo, my mom, way back in the day, she would take us to the library. We lived in the country, so it was a big deal to go into town and go to the library. And so education was always a door to being able to achieve new things. It was just how I could then give back to the other kids, Cantor said. It was the same for her sister, Stacy, who just earned her doctorate. She couldn't graduate, so last Friday night, we threw our own graduation for her, and I hooded her as the new doctor, Stacy Johnson. So we had our own home graduation May 15th, Cantor said. She added that she always wanted to be an educator, and that Stacy, from the time she was in high school, knew she wanted to be a teacher. And I was so against the cliche of twins. Oh, you know, they're twins, of course, they're going to do the same thing. And I went into college and was undecided. I guess it was after my first year, I thought, you know what, forget about it. That's what I want to do. And so I went down that road, but yeah, nobody in our family had been teachers. And so my sister and I were really the first to kind of go into that field, Cantor said. Her family is mainly nurses and firemen. Ira Ann is Cantor's first school chief post. She has been a campus principal, assistant principal, served as director of testing, and then took on accountability and later became executive director of special education. She was familiar with the community and always liked the area. Plus, it's close enough to Odessa that she can see her family. Cantor and her husband, Stephen, have three children. Her husband is from Jacksonville, just south of Tyler. The most important thing for me was a really strong educational system, and Ira Ann has a history of excellence. That was something that was extremely attractive to us as a family. And we wanted to research that further, and I came up for my interviews and met the board and came up the second time and was then later able to meet some of the team members and administrators here in Ira Ann. They have phenomenal people and coworkers. I'm just extremely impressed, not only with the community, but just that camaraderie, Cantor said. She added that the facilities are phenomenal. And the community has done a really good job of supporting the school to ensure that they have the best facilities that they can possibly have for their kids. So the physical structures are wonderful, but also being able to really offer kids high quality, high class, world class education in a smaller environment. It's really kind of unheard of. And Ira Ann is excelling at that, Cantor added. ECISD Deputy Superintendent Stephanie Howard was superintendent in Plains, so Cantor has been able to get advice from her and Superintendent Scott Murray. Stephanie has been extremely helpful, and so if I have questions about something, especially when it comes to recapture and school funding and things like that for small districts, she continues to be a wealth of information, and Dr. Murray as well. He's been extremely helpful and supportive and just a great mentor. I've been blessed to have a great working relationship with them. So moving into this role, it kind of takes away the, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? Because I have some really intelligent, hardworking people that I can call on for help, Cantor said. She had a big picture view of performance throughout the grades, understood the impact of graduation plans, college and career readiness, and the accountability system when it came to the State of Texas Assessment of Academic Readiness STAR test. Special education was also kind of like running a small school district within a school district, because special education has its own funding and it receives federal grants. My background hadn't traditionally been in special ed. I had a minor in psychology, but I didn't have a lot of work other than my experience on campus with special education. So what I did there was really, I found the smartest of the smart, surrounded myself with great people, and they are phenomenal. Then we worked through and built systems and processes to ensure that that not only were we checking off those compliance boxes, but they were taking it above and beyond to provide services for students. That's kind of how the 18 plus program Transition to the Future came into play, Cantor said. Transition to the Future helps students learn life skills to become more independent. Cantor said she has always wanted to be a superintendent. My dad said and instilled in us from an early age, if you're going to complain about something when you get up and you go do something, and that's the same philosophy that I've had about education. We're not complaining about it. We're trying to work together to find better solutions for kids, Cantor said. As a teacher, that was kind of my thought process. When I moved into administration, I saw teachers struggling. How can I help them in moving into that? And the same thing as a principal. I've always been drawn to service. So what it is that I can do to help answer and make things better? My job is to support the students and staff of Ira Ann to ensure that I assist with removing barriers so that they can really take off, she added. School Board President Steve Garlock said trustees went through a lengthy process in its superintendent search. They used a search firm and had received about 30 applicants. He said they brought three great candidates in for a second round of interviews, all of whom had great experience and knowledge that would have helped the district. Speaking for himself, Garlock said the things that made Cantor stand out were enthusiasm for her current job and eagerness to help all students. Dr. Cantor talked about mentoring and coaching those around her to build a team. The understanding that sometimes a vision changes or something you planned doesn't work out and you have to change direction to achieve the goal, as well as her vast knowledge of the business of education. I feel she can elevate our students and staff. Both are great, but if you have accepted where we are currently at is good enough, then you have failed your students and staff. Our motto is excellence every student, every classroom, every day. The ISISD board feels strongly about this statement, and we always want to be moving forward, Garlock said. Obituary for Friday, June 5th. Barbara Ellen Bennett Tucker. Barbara Ellen Tucker of Gorman, formerly of Odessa, passed away Wednesday, June 3rd. Barbara Ellen Bennett was born to Newton Ferris and Tessie Emily Bennett in Gorman, December 2nd, 1934. She married James Claude Tucker in 1953. Barbara is survived by her son, Joe Tucker, sister Helen Craighead, one granddaughter and several great-granddaughters, a daughter-in-law, Ellen Tucker, and numerous nieces, nephews, and extended family. She was preceded in death by her husband, Claude, her son, James, parents, Newton and Tessie, her brother, John Wayne, and sisters, Edith and Hazel. A memorial service will be held at First Baptist Church of Gorman at 10 o'clock Saturday, June 6th, followed by graveside service at Alameda Cemetery. Masks will be required and provided if needed. Arrangements are by Higginbotham Funeral Home. Death notices. Roman Mateo Aguero. Roman Mateo Aguero, 2 weeks old, of San Angelo, died Wednesday, June 3rd, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Guadalupe Maria Lupita Carrasco Tercero. Guadalupe Maria Lupita Carrasco Tercero, 63, of Odessa, died Wednesday, June 3rd. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. Monday, June 8th at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Gilbert Bobby Vera Cruz. Gilbert Bobby Vera Cruz, 67, of Stanton, died Wednesday, June 3rd. A funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. June 8th at Primera Iglesia Bautista, 507 North Tyler in Midland. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery in Midland. Arrangements are by Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, May 31st, 2020. City airport boardings dropped by nearly 90% in April. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at MRT.com. City officials expected Midland International Airport to be hit hard during the coronavirus pandemic. It has been. The city gave a report last week that showed the number of people traveling on American Eagle, Southwest, or United dropped from 50,350 in April 2019 to 5,000 262 in April 2020. That was a decline of 89.5% year over year in April. It was a decline that is basically unprecedented in Midland International Airport's history. The sharp decrease in April's numbers continued a trend that started in March. The number of boardings this fiscal year went from being 7.7% higher at the end of February to 17.4% lower at the end of April. Also down this fiscal year are fuel sales, 6.8%, and parking revenues, 16.1%. This trend is expected to continue long term because of the number of flights leaving Midland International Airport in May will be one-third of the number of flights before the coronavirus, according to the City of Midland. The city is expected to receive nearly $23 million in economic relief funding for Midland International Airport. The Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act was signed into law by President Donald Trump this spring and is providing direct economic assistance for American workers and families, small businesses, and preserves jobs for American industries, according to the Department of the Treasury. Midland International Airport will receive $22.935 million. That amount is the seventh most for any airport in the state of Texas and the most for any Texas airport not located in Dallas-Fort Worth, Houston, San Antonio, or Austin. MARFA steps up, creates initiative to help restaurants. Group sells solidarity bonds to be used at local eateries. By J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis@hearstnp.com. The city of Marfa has been a hotspot for tourists. However, with the pandemic, the town and its residents have been hit economically by the lack of visitors and temporarily closed businesses. Businesses started closing on March 19th, and the city issued shelter-in-place orders on March 27th, according to Susan Kitt, a volunteer with Marfa Steps Up. The group has created initiatives to help individuals and businesses make it through this difficult time. The latest initiative is Martha Solidarity Bonds, which will help support restaurants, most of which are open only for takeout. To people who are buying bonds, the best thing to do is go to their website or call in to find out how and when they're open before they come to Marfa and try to redeem the bond. Kit said volunteer Shelley Bernstein came up with the idea for solidarity bonds, which are similar to something created in Brooklyn after Hurricane Sandy. The Marcia initiative involves 12 restaurants and 18 artists who have created 18 different bonds. It is really wonderful portrait from the artists in our community when you see all these 18 bonds together, she said. When you go to the website, you can pick the bond that you like. You can pick the restaurant you want to support, and you can pick the denomination. 50% of the value of the bond goes directly to the venue for overhead costs, while 50% can be redeemed later when the buyer visits the restaurant. The Solidarity Bond Initiative has received help from the Permian Basin Area Foundation in the form of a $10,000 matching grant. Kerr said. Marfa Steps Up has started other initiatives for residents and employees. The first initiative was the Service Worker Relief Fund for people who are service workers in our community that are working in restaurants, bars, galleries, retail stores, barbershops, salons, massage studios, and yoga studios. From the outset, these were some of the people hit the hardest because they were out of a job. They're hourly workers, and they don't know when they're going to go back to work. In April, the group started a GoFundMe for local employees in the service industry. The fundraiser raised almost $50,000. 175 service workers qualified, she said. Instead of giving people cash, those who qualified received grocery cards to two Marfa stores, Porter's and the Let Go. Everybody needs food, and this would also stimulate our two local grocery stores, Kerr said. The grocery stores agreed to work with Marfa Steps Up and also donated money to round up the grocery store gift cards to $300 per person. The money raised during the fundraiser would have provided $269 on a grocery store card per person. Kerr said the group will continue to create initiatives as the need arises.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, May 31st, 2020. All inmates back from other counties to be completed soon, by Bob Campbell. It's a different world inside the Ector County Detention Center, where the recently opened $20 million expansion has almost doubled capacity and has allowed hundreds of inmates to be brought home from around the state. The long, lonesome hallways with beige walls and wide aqua stripes along the ceilings and baseboards are peopled by occasional small groups of detention officers and inmates in white uniforms with green stripes, indicating they are high risk. In a May 19th walking tour, jail administrator Stephen McNeil said the inmates average two or three fights a day, and once or twice a month assault detention officers, resulting in third-degree felony charges of assaulting a public servant. The new 61,716-square-foot facility houses members of the West Texas Bloods, Crips, Aryan Circle, Aryan Brotherhood, Latin Kings, and Mexican Mafia gangs, who sometimes must be kept separate. It has had a man who identified with ISIS, and it houses psychotics who grit their teeth to refuse medications and smear feces on the walls. Asked then if becoming a DO is serious business, Captain McNeil said, "Yes, sir, it is." Starting at $23.23 an hour, he said, a lot of our applicants used to work in the oil field and were faced with that challenge of job security. Some aspire to be street officers and others want to advance in the detention center. There are a lot of opportunities to make a career of it. McNeil said Sheriff Mike Griffiths and he had been encouraged by the new hires and the dozens of applications they'd received from prospective detention officers, DOs. There had been enough that most of the nearly 300 inmates who had been outsourced to other counties had been brought home, with plans to return the remaining 118 within a few weeks. That'll save Ector County about $2.3 million a year and see the expansion pay for itself in 8 to 10 years. Walking through the maximum security expansion area, Captain McNeil said the old 135,220 square foot jail has a capacity of 667 inmates and the new one 412, for a total of 1,079. With the Texas Commission on Jail Standards requiring one jailer for each 48 men and women inmates, 12 new guards were starting work May 26th to bring the staff to 143, and the applications of 40 aspirants were being processed. The DOs get 2 weeks of training and work with a training officer for 2 weeks till going to work on their own with monthly evaluations. Typically, they walk 9 to 10 miles a day on the job. They're taught to recognize potential suicides, de-escalate tensions by talking in a certain way, and thwart the con games of system-wise inmates, among other things. However, the county commissioner's April 14th hiring freeze will leave the jobs of 40 DOs temporarily unfilled, along with those of 8 booking clerks, 2 nurses, and a secretary. The Texas Department of Criminal Justice is not accepting new inmates, so they're backing up in county jails statewide, McNeil said. Inmates in blue were helping Summit Food employees by cleaning the big stainless steel bedecked kitchen, while orange-clad men waited to deliver the meals on trays. Men in black and white are low-risk prisoners who are allowed to work outside, mowing grass and cleaning the grounds south of town off the west side of US 385. Inmates in Orange also clean restrooms, take out trash, and sanitize cells. Most wear the khaki of minimum and medium security inmates. Women, of whom there were 104 May 19th, also wear blue and are kept separate by sight and sound, McNeil said. Asked if there had been any problems with the expansion, he said there were plumbing issues in some cells that a subcontractor was working on. He hopes to have murals of the American and Texas flags painted on the walls. Griffiths said the other counties would only take the better behaved inmates and those who didn't have serious medical problems. We are no longer sending inmates out, and some of those we have sent, like those in Burnett County, are paper ready, which means they are ready to be transferred to prison once the TDCJ opens back up, Griffiths said. This will relieve our contract services budget and be more convenient in terms of court appearances and visitations by attorneys, as well as family members. We're hoping the jail population doesn't grow more than expected, and we will be okay for another 10 to 15 years. Griffiths said city and county officers average arresting 25 to 40 people per day on weekdays, and 40 to 50 on Saturdays and Sundays. He said the expansion may even let Ector County start housing inmates from other counties and the U.S. Marshals Service and bring in the same kind of money it has been sending out. Most prisoners are housed in multiple occupancy areas for 8 men with smart communications screens and keyboards, where from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. each day, they may peruse the legal library or send emails to family members and jail staff members. They may also watch TV. There are 4 recreation yards in the old and new jails where DOs are particularly chary of fights. The capacity in each yard is 48. The old and new jails have 650 cameras, but McNeil said there is no substitute for personal observation. Inmates on high alert suicide watches have guards in the cells with them 24/7, mostly to be sure they don't strangle themselves. We have a mental health staff and 21 trained mental health officers, the administrator said. The inmates can get real creative, hiding in different areas where we might not see them. Some cut their wrists, but most use a ligature around the neck. If they say they want to die or they engage in self-destructive behavior, we move them to a violence prevention cell and take away certain items. There are 4 visitation areas with capacities of 7 on each side, including attorneys who may meet with their clients in private rooms. And there are 4 disciplinary areas for up to 8 prisoners each, who may have been fighting or who are recovering from medical problems. McNeil said the expansion was built by the general contractor, Cooper Construction of Odessa, to prevent escapes like the ones in 2007, when 2 men broke through 3 levels of ceiling with a broom handle and were on the loose for a few hours till recaptured. The ceiling is now 12 inches of concrete. The cells are constantly inspected visually, and color-coded lights outside show how recently they've been cleared. The DOs average confiscating only 4 to 5 shanks or crude knives annually, owing to the policy of prohibiting materials inside the jail that they could be made from. But the officers find contraband on a daily basis, like strings made from uniforms and blankets to make fishing lines, and send messages from cell to cell. The prohibition of metal is enforced with the help of a very sensitive metal detector that alerts to things as small as a staple in a pocket or a razor blade in a book. We have to be careful when they leave the building because they can find things on the grounds or in the parking lots, McNeil said. Sometimes family members leave things. They break the TVs to steal the metal in the cables.
Hello, this is Michael, reading from the Odessa American, Friday, June 5th. Intramuscular injection usually safe. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Dear Dr. Roach, I give my wife an otricide intramuscular injection monthly into the gluteal muscle. I was taught to pull back on the needle to be sure you aren't in a blood vessel. Sometimes I'm unable to inject the medication, just can't plunge the syringe, despite being sure the needle was working before injecting. If I try again in a different spot, it works. What's going on? Answer. Intramuscular injections are among the safest, and anyone can be trained to do them. However, things can occasionally go wrong. Aspiration is the term for pulling back a little on the syringe before injecting to be sure you aren't in a blood vessel. It is extremely unlikely that you'll hit a blood vessel. And the practice of aspiration is now discouraged by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention for injecting vaccines. However, aspiration is still recommended for medications that would be dangerous to inject into the blood vessel. Octreocide is not dangerous to give intravenously, so I would recommend against aspiration for her. I suspect you may be aspirating hard enough that the syringe is getting blocked. If you do aspirate, a light touch is sufficient. It's also possible that you have inserted the needle deep enough to be pressing against the hip bone, although that's also unlikely. The hip bone is quite deep in most people. If you are unable to inject, try pulling back on the syringe a half inch or so. Dear Abby, for Friday, June 5th. Sorrow consumes couples' lives after son's suicide. Dear Abby, my wife and I lost our son to suicide a few years ago. We have never gotten over it. I have recovered somewhat and would like to resume having intimate relations, but she's not that far along. I no longer feel there's any reason to continue on this earth. There is no point to me being here. I think about suicide daily. I have been told if I were going to do this and hurt my family as my son did, I would have already done it. My wife and I have been cast into a hell that's impossible to bear. There is no way to describe the pain, anger, and sorrow we feel. I want to die because I feel the world would be a better place without my sorrowful self taking up resources. I have sought help ever since we lost my son and have been taking all kinds of medication that I no longer want to take. Is there a way out other than my option? Beyond Depressed. Dear Beyond Depressed, please accept my deepest sympathy for the tragic loss of your son. I cannot imagine the hell you and your wife are going through. Because you can't get the thought of suicide out of your mind, it is very important that you continue with your medications. Also, a group that might be helpful for you and your wife is the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. If you contact them, they can refer you to a local support group for people who are surviving a loved one's suicide. The website is afsp.org. If, however, you feel you have reached a point where harming yourself is imminent, I urge you to call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 800-273-8255. Please don't give up. Dear Abby, I have two children. One is six and the other is an infant. My six-year-old is kind but mischievous at times. I am a firm believer that children need loving parents, but also parents who discipline when it's needed. My mother recently came to live with me and my husband. She helps out a lot, but is causing some confusion in our home. She doesn't discipline my six-year-old when needed. In fact, she often acts like a child herself when she should be acting like an adult. This issue causes my six-year-old to sometimes be disrespectful. When my husband and I hear the smart mouth talk, we address it, but there's only so much we can do when my mother won't take an adult role. I have had several conversations with her about it, but nothing changes. I don't want her to leave, but I'm afraid her attitude toward parenting and discipline will cause some real problems in my home. Please help. Disciplined in Virginia. Dear Disciplined, continue the conversation with your mother. Explain that although she may think you are too strict with your older child, you are that child's mother, and this is the way you want the child raised. Then tell her that if enforcing the rules is too much for her, she may have to find other living arrangements. Talk to your child as well. Make sure he or she understands that the rules come from his or her parents and no one else. I am troubled by your statement that your mother sometimes acts like a child. I wish you had mentioned why she's living with you. If you suspect there's a possibility she may be experiencing the onset of dementia, insist that she be evaluated by a physician and a neurologist to ensure that she's well.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note: Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label astrologers put on a said degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Gemini and a moon in Sagittarius. Happy birthday for Friday, June 5, 2020. Complex and quick-witted, you spend this year trying to make yourself understood. Once simplified, your projects are brilliant and creative. Late September, you become prosperous with them. If single, you prefer to stay that way until you meet your equal, which is a challenging search. If attached, which often comes later in life, you are then fully committed and share much marital bliss. Pisces can be as unique as you are. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 5 stars. You attract new opportunities today. You realize that an old responsibility or limitation is not quite resolved. Be patient and conscientious about tying up loose ends. Have faith, and all will be well. Tonight, you feel a final chapter in your life is being completed. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 4 stars. Your natural dignity and self-control help you gracefully balance your domestic life with your professional persona. There are important synchronicities unfolding. You investigate a mystery. Your timely response turns any negative attention into positive recognition. Tonight, let go of the status quo. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 4 stars. Partnerships are entering a more nurturing phase for you. The health and wealth of those you are closest to will improve. You might be attracted to 2 very different contracts at once and have trouble choosing. Tonight, intimate dinner with those you love the most. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 3 stars. Your digestion is delicate. Cancer rules the stomach, so never eat when upset. Use care today with unfamiliar cuisine, especially if it is very rich and seasoned. Housemates need time to discuss ideas and views. Patience and listening bring you rewards. Tonight, early bedtime. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 2 stars. A long-term bond might loosen. Your natural pride and confidence make you feel surprised by rejection. Although you are deeply affectionate and will take a disappointment with difficulty, your lion dignity carries you through. Tonight, children are especially precious to you. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 3 stars. Repairs and cleaning around your home might require attention. Be patient with less than perfect family situations. Make constructive efforts at improvement. Problems will smooth over by the end of the day. Tonight, to your surprise, many social approaches and invitations come your way. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 3 stars. Now is the time to make the dream of writing for publication a reality. An unusual person might be visible in your neighborhood. Good or bad neighbors are not quite as they appear. You reevaluate your first impressions. Tonight, let go of outdated possessions. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 4 stars. There is an urge to acquire new belongings and to discard those that are superfluous. Treasure and appreciate what truly matters and let go of the rest. Today you examined what material possessions and wealth really mean to you. Tonight, new values emerge. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 5 stars. Today is quite a magical day. There is a hint of myth and legend, a larger-than-life quality around you. Enjoy meetings, functions, and the wider parameters of activity, but keep a sense of balance and perspective. Do not neglect details. Tonight, keep promises. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 4 stars. Time spent alone is refreshing and healing. Daydreams are especially vivid and meaningful. Analyze them and enjoy new insights into your own psyche. You will revel in quiet outdoor scenery. Tonight, friends surprise you with an invitation to a new social group. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 4 stars. Your social life is bright and active today. You will be eager to get to know an acquaintance better. A friendship might propel you toward new spiritual awareness or artistic expression. Tonight, make or buy gifts that suggest humor and a personal message. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 4 stars. Your sensitive nature has been challenged by scandals in the professional world in past years. Now this trend is being replaced with new excitement, even a bit of glamour, in your social life. Recognize your long-range goals. Tonight, select the proper group affiliations for yourself. Born today, writer Spalding Gray, 1941, musician Laurie Anderson, 1947, actor Mark Wahlberg, 1971.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.